This is Carrie Campakis, and you are listening to the Girl Mom Podcast. Today's episode is about a struggle that affects nearly one out of every three teenagers today, especially girls, and that struggle is anxiety. While some stress in life is good and helps us rise to meet new challenges, there's also unhealthy stress that turns into anxiety over time and can cause real damage. My guest today, Alice Chernock, is a friend of mine here in Birmingham and also a licensed professional counselor and certified eating disorder specialist. With more than 20 years of experience with working with adolescents and young adults, Alice is passionate about helping families find alternatives to medication for relief of symptoms related to anxiety, focus and attention, insomnia, and other cognitive dysregulations. Alice loves public speaking, has the best personality, and also speaks regularly on the Rooted Ministry Parenting Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, please leave a 5-star review wherever you listen and share this episode with your friends. Also, remember that I've started a new community on Substack where I'm sharing new articles, downloads, and content, and I'd be honored for you to join me there as a free subscriber or as a paid subscriber to get extra content. Find the link to it in the show notes. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the show. Alice, I have been looking forward to this podcast all week long. I told you that I've had a hiatus from podcasting, just working on some other projects. But this one, I'm so excited about it. And it's funny because I've had so many signs lately just reminding me of what a problem anxiety is in teenagers today. So I think your timing here is so perfect.
Well, thank you so much for having me back. It's just so fun. I mean, just to be in your presence and like hang out with you again, it's just such a delight.
I feel the same way. I'm like, I just get to be my friend Alice.
Exactly.
So I told you earlier, I recommend you all the time because I have a lot of mom friends who message me. Yeah. Their daughters are struggling with anxiety. And I'm like, I don't know if Alice is available. She's pretty booked up, but I always recommend Covenant Counseling.
Well, thank you. Please do.
Yes.
There's some wonderful resources out there at Covenant, but then just around the city, I think we're very blessed to have some wonderful resources.
Yes, I do too. And I think it's good because they're really grounded in some just solid Christian principles. Right. Even if somebody's not bringing their faith into the conversation, that's what it's rooted in.
Absolutely.
And to me, that is so important.
Agreed. I totally agree.
So let's talk about anxiety.
Let's do it.
You know, you and I got to be friends because we both share passion for girls, especially teenage girls.
Yep.
And you've been working with them on the professional side for 20 years. And
can we stop with that? How crazy is that? Can we just stop? Like, how is it possible that we are that old?
I know.
That I am that old? That 20 years of doing this? It's crazy.
I know. It's so crazy. Oh. We had Harry and I were at a wedding recently and realized that our ring bearer from our wedding, he is like now 30 years old.
No.
And married and has a child of his own.
Yes.
Like, that will make you feel old.
Creepy.
Yes. Yeah. So crazy.
That's funny. But
anxiety, so I know that you've probably counseled girls with anxiety for years,
yeah.
But you know, what was going on before COVID? I felt like we were seeing a spike before COVID, and then post COVID, it's just gone off the rails.
It really has. I agree. It's hard to, I wish that we could pinpoint one particular thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
And I think that there are probably 1,000 things that we could point to. I know that kind of the go-to trigger that we're all talking about is social media,
mm-hmm.
and the increase in social media. And I do think that we have to add that to the conversation because that's a very strong indicator of the trend of social media that has increased really does fall pretty in line with the rise in anxiety that has increased as well. So yes, I think that there's definitely that. I mean, I think statistically speaking, it was something like 32% of our, between teenagers to college age students, experienced anxiety pre-COVID. Post-COVID,
mm-hmm.
that jumped to like 64%. I mean, it just doubled after COVID. And I think that there are, you know, definitely there's social media stuff, but I also just think the pressures
mm-hmm.
that, especially in our communities that our kids are dealing with, it's just astronomical.
Yeah,
you know?
It is. And it's crazy just through speaking events. I'm like, I go to small towns and I go to big cities, and it's the same stuff everywhere.
Right.
Just struggles with friendship, anxiety. Like when I mention anxiety in a talk, I always have people come up afterward and sharing stories or saying, thank you for sharing that and asking for additional resources. It is just such a struggle. And I think it's also, you know, I think it's also the way that we are framing situations. And I saw this really interesting quote. It was in this book called Late Bloomers. Hmm. And I believe the guy is the publisher of Forbes magazine. At least he was at the time. Uh-huh. And he released this book before COVID. But I'm like, if it was true before COVID, it's especially true now. But he had a statistic in there that said that today's teenagers, just the mental health crisis, have, you know, are facing more mental health challenges than teenagers who lived through World War II or the Great Depression.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's wild.
But the craziest thing is they said that, you know, traditionally mental health illnesses, like it might be depression, anxiety, whatever, mental health issues were triggered by an event. You could point to it, like they're going through the depression or a war. But today, a lot of these mental health illnesses start by the way we process the world. It's our view of the world. So that's what I tell parents is like, we've got to have that healthy worldview. And that's to me, this is where my faith comes in, like the hope of Jesus.
Absolutely.
And that framework, because if we're processing things through a worldly framework without that hope of Jesus, and you're like, this is all there is, then everything feels dire and doom and gloom.
Yeah, it really does.
And I do think it can really contribute to the anxiety that we're not only feeling as parents, but that our kids are feeling
too. I totally agree with you. You know, I mean, I think it's interesting if you go back and do some word searches, word research, the root of the Greek word worry is actually translated to be divided. And I think that that's so applicable because when we worry, our minds are divided. And our minds are divided between what we have today and what we fear we will lose tomorrow, or what we need to get done today and what we think we need to get done tomorrow. Our minds are divided. That's the root of the word worry.
And I think
that that goes into just our Christian life, that, you know, we worship a God who is in the present with us. He gives us the grace to handle what we experience for today.
Right.
And tomorrow will worry about itself. You know, Scripture's clear on that.
Right.
But we're not in tomorrow. So that's why our anxiety is going to be even more heightened as we look into the future, because we're looking into a place where Christ isn't yet.
Yes, you know? That's so true. And it's funny. I told you earlier that Camille and her friends, they're in eighth grade and they do these Bible studies every week. I love it. They'll come to our house
as we live
near the school and they take turns leading it and they'll research. And sometimes they'll say, Mom, well, you know, you come, you know, speak on this or add to this, or I can't get my words right. But they did one on anxiety today. And we were talking about that. I was like, you know, part of anxiety is not thinking, you know, you're worrying today that you're worried about this happening on Saturday, but you don't have the grace that you're going to need on Saturday yet.
Exactly.
It comes when you need it.
Yes.
And, you know, God's timing is so good because I'm just finished this book by Corey Ten Boom.
Oh.
I think it's called The
Hiding Place. Yes.
It's amazing.
Of course. It's so good.
So good. Yes. And I'm like, and I was like, there was a story in there, and I've read this story before, that her dad, one time, I think somebody that they were close to passed away, and she just all of a sudden became so scared of her father passing away. Mm-hmm. And she told him that. And he said, Corey, when we get on the train, when do I give you your ticket? She's like, right before we get on. And he's like, that's how our merciful Father is. Hmm. You know, he gives you what you need when you need it, but not sooner.
Yes.
And you trust in that.
It's so good.
Yeah. And so I think, like with anxiety, like I said, we worry about what if this happens? What if this friend group doesn't invite me or I don't make the team? You know, like you can't imagine how you're going to deal with it.
Right.
But you don't have the grace yet.
Once we get to that situation, we're like, okay, I can do this.
All right.
It wasn't so bad, or maybe it was really bad, but I'm still okay.
Right.
God is still good. I'm still safe. I'm still okay. You know, I think that we let our imaginations, you know, I think the Bible is so clear on taking our thoughts captive.
Yes.
And I think that this is a prime example of needing to take our thoughts captive. Because we can let ourselves spiral into this world where we don't exist yet.
Yes.
If we're not careful, you know?
Exactly. And I think that's what I talk a lot about too, is just, you know, this is how the Bible does apply, is taking your thoughts captive. And even I was talking to a mom friend recently. She's like, I just am so anxious. I think I need to go on medication. I just wake up, I'm anxious, all of this. Yeah. And she's like, what do you think? And I was like, I'm not against medication because sometimes we need it.
But absolutely.
But I would really try to pinpoint what's making you anxious. Like, she was like, I don't know. And I was like, well, there's some thought there that's making you anxious.
Yep.
And sometimes we just got to sit still and be okay with sitting with it and identifying that thought, so then we can go replace it with a healthy thought. You know, I was like, you got a child that'll be graduating soon and your kids are getting older. It might be you're anxious about just that lack of control or that sadness or that fear of letting them go, like just really kind of trying to identify it and then think about, you know, maybe the enemy might be telling you a lie.
Yes.
With that fear that you have that's feeding into that fear, but what can you do to replace it with the truth from God?
I completely agree. I mean, I think one of my favorite passages in the Bible, and oh my gosh, this is going to be horrible. I think it's from Romans or Philippians or I don't know, somewhere. Not terrible. It is one of my favorites. But it talks about how we aren't to be, conformed to this world, but be transformed, right? But I think what's cool, Carrie, is that it doesn't say get transformed by renewing your body or renewing your grades, but it's be transformed by the renewing of your mind.
Yes.
Oh, so don't be conformed to the world because the world is going to say, you need to worry about this. Well, what about this? Well, have your kids done this?
Right.
Did your child make the baseball team? Well, have your kids taken the ACT yet? Have the scholarships come in yet? Have your child da 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 da? The world is going to keep telling you to worry about stuff.
Yes.
Scripture says, don't be conformed to that. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And so I think that having a healthy perspective of what worry is, what anxiety is, and recognizing it needs to be a transformation of the mind is so critical in understanding how we can help our kids.
Yes.
You know, knowledge is power. Let's know what we need to transform.
Yes. Oh, I could just like give a standing ovation. Ooh. That is so good. It's true. So let's think of some practical examples. You work with teenage girls. Give me an example. Let's think of some examples of like, this is what they're telling themselves. That's the thought that's causing them anxiety. How would you tell them to take that thought, give it, make it captive to Christ and replace it with a healthy thought that is truth from God?
Yeah, that's awesome. So I think what you're describing is what we in the therapy world called cognitive behavioral therapy,
yes.
CBT. Okay. Mm-hmm. And CBT, the premise of CBT is taking your thoughts. Think about it like a triangle. On each point of the triangle, you have your thoughts, your feelings, and your behaviors. And those three things are always interconnected. We can't pull one of those things out without recognizing that there are two more aspects that always go along with it. Okay?
Okay.
So if the behavior is anxiety, worry, mm-hmm. well, there's a thought and a feeling that also goes along with that.
Mm.
So I think that we have to help our kids break down, okay, what's really going on? So I think understanding the nature of anxiety is really important. And that's probably one of the starting places where I go with kids because I think anxiety, you and I've talked about this, I think anxiety honestly gets a bad rap.
Right.
And one of the best things that we can do for our kids is to help them actually make friends with their anxiety.
Right.
It's not all bad.
Right.
And I really do, you know, I mean, I laugh that everybody's like, oh, Monday, I dread Monday. I kind of feel sorry for Monday. Monday gets a bad rap, you know? Like,
right.
What did Monday do to us? You know, they didn't ask to be the first day of the week. Well, I kind of feel the same way about anxiety, you
right,
know? Anxiety
right.
gets a bad rap, but it's really not all bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think let's start by helping our kids see, hey, anxiety actually does a lot for you. It can increase your focus.
Mm.
We want you to have some anxiety. If you're about to go take a Spanish test, I want you to be anxious about it. Why? Because it's going to increase your focus. It's actually going to help you perform better.
Mm, that's
athletes
good.
Thrive on that adrenaline rush that anxiety provides. That's mm-hmm. a really good thing. It's going to help your body work harder. It actually boosts your immune system. Anxiety actually releases dopamine in our brains. All right. There are some really, really good things that happen with anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think helping our kids see, look, it's not all bad. And this is interesting that we're having this conversation because I was actually at a Bible study on Wednesday night and your name got brought up by a story that you had told about your kids. And my friend was telling me that you had told this story that your daughters were at a place sometime and there was like a creepy guy that came and maybe they were like talking to your daughters and the whole premise was like, stand up for yourself and
yes.
you know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's what anxiety does for us.
It's your gut instinct.
Exactly.
Yes.
We want you to have anxiety.
Right.
That is your body doing what God has created your body to do.
Right.
Anxiety is there to help keep you safe. So I like to explain to kids, I'm going to go off on a tangent about why we have anxiety, all right? There is a little part in our brain called our amygdala, all right? And that is the emotion center of our brain. Its whole job, when I work with little kids, I call it your own little personal superhero that lives inside your brain, all right?
Okay.
And we will name that superhero. I myself am Amazing Alice, and I have sparkly pink boots, and I sprinkle glitter behind my cape everywhere I go. All right. That's my little superhero self. That's my amygdala.
That's your amygdala. Exactly. Alice the amygdala.
Exactly.
Okay.
So your amygdala is there when there's a creepy guy that comes up to you. Your amygdala's job is to protect you. It's to make those hairs on the back of your hand stand up and say, whoa, something's not right. I don't like this. Your amygdala releases oxygen, adrenaline, and hormones to help protect you and help your body fight or flight if you need it. That's where this comes from. All right. The problem is our little superhero selves, they want to jump into action and they want to help every time they can, just like superheroes do. They are a doer, but they're not a thinker. So they don't take the time to actually assess a situation and think, Spanish test is maybe hard, maybe not super fun, but it is not the same kind of threat as somebody creepy coming after me, right?
Right.
Your brain doesn't care. So it's going to have the exact same reaction regardless of the situation. It doesn't think through it.
This is the amygdala.
This is the amygdala.
Fight or flight.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right? So I think helping our kids see, okay, your body is actually doing what it's supposed to do. We don't want that anxiety to just go away or make it never appear. Yeah, you need that. It's just we're worrying about it at the wrong time.
Right.
Your brain isn't helping it try to figure out when is the appropriate time to have oxygen, adrenaline, and hormones, and when is the, maybe a crappy situation, but not a scary situation.
Right. Yeah, it's so good. And I talked to a guy one time. He works with all these successful businessmen. And he likes to kind of quiz people, like just throw out different questions and see what the answers are. But he asked them, he's like, what is one of your biggest tips for success? Like, what's helped you succeed? And one common link he had for so many of them was meditation.
Yeah.
They said that they would meditate, and it might be for 5 minutes, like just throughout the day, 5 minutes. But he said that, you know, meditation takes you from that amygdala part of your brain, that fight or flight, wanting just to jump into action without thinking about it, to your prefrontal cortex, which I know you're going
to next,
which is the smart part of your brain that, you know, can really think through, that's logical and rational, but it takes you out of that fight or flight mode and into that prefrontal cortex mode. And that has helped them succeed. And I started thinking, I think as moms, like, whoa, I think I live in fight or flight or amygdala mode. And I think as moms, because we're so busy and you're just, you know, multitasking and stopping, go. It's so easy to stay in that panic fight or flight mode rather than pulling back and saying, is this something I really need to be worried about?
Exactly.
I didn't sign him up for this summer league that all my friends are doing. Is he never going to play high school football or high school, you know, basketball or whatever?
Well, and I think there goes the mind that's divided between what I have today and what I'm worried about tomorrow.
Yes.
For today, he's fine. My kid is fine.
Right.
Tomorrow will worry about itself. If he doesn't make the high school football team in 4 years, okay, then we'll handle that in 4 years.
Right.
But for today, I'm okay.
Yes. Something else I think about is recently I talked to a pediatrician. She's in another community, but she was saying that just the difference that she's seeing in moms these days and the anxiety, and she blames a lot of it on social media, but she's like, they're just taking in all this input. And it's just given them anxiety. And I try to tell them that, you know, my best advice is to find a few good trusted sources in your daily world, a few good vetted websites, and that's it. Like, don't go get advice and seeking advice from all over the place, because a lot of times they're kind of throwing themselves into these frenzies or thinking their child has an issue that they really don't even have because of what they're seeing on social media or what's in vogue right now.
Yes.
And so I think that goes back to, like, you know, as we're getting away, as we forget about God, you know, and just praying and meditating and going to Him, like, okay, God, what is best for our family? What are you calling us to do, even if it's different than what other people are doing? rather than letting the world have all this input.
To dictate that. Yes. I totally agree with you. Well, and I'm going to piggyback on the meditation piece, because I think that, you know, when the amygdala releases oxygen, adrenaline, and hormones, it changes the physical composition of what's happening in our body, right? Mm. And so it makes our heartbeat so much faster. And that is because it's pumping that oxygen around so it can fuel our arms and legs in case we do need to fight or flight, right? A lot of times we can get headaches when we're anxious. You could get dizzy, and that's because the oxygen levels in your head have increased and the carbon dioxide has decreased in your brain. Mm. Some people feel their hands get kind of sweaty and clammy. Well, that's normal. That's a good thing. That's to cool your body down in case you're fighting or flighting. You want your body to sweat, right?
Right.
The big one that I hear, I don't know about you, but I hear, especially with teenage girls, is that they feel their stomach starts to hurt when they're anxious. You know, I mean, I've had clients who've literally had to check out of school because they feel like they're going to vomit or just be sick in general. They feel like they just, those butterflies in the stomach. Mm-hmm. Well, that's because when your amygdala decides to release oxygen, adrenaline, and hormones, it has decided it's more important to do that than it is to chew up your lunch. So when you're anxious, your digestive system literally shuts off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is why you start feeling pukey, all right? So I want to help kids understand that there are very real reasons why your body is reacting the way it's reacting and, you know, what it's doing,
right,
and that it's a good thing.
Right.
Your body is doing what it's supposed to do. Now, coming to your meditation, because that oxygen level has increased, we've got to take control and regulate our breathing again.
Yes, all right? That's what I was going to ask you. Is that your first coping tip there? It would be to take deep breaths?
Yes.
Because that takes you out of the amygdala?
Exactly. Right? We know our breathing has gone to...
Right, right.
So we have to... And like consciously make an effort to get our breathing back into place. All right. I've got a really good breathing technique that I use.
Perfect.
Especially with kids. Okay. But I actually love it for adults because I feel like everybody can relate to it.
Okay.
This is something called cookie breathing. Okay.
Okay.
Cookie breathing. What's your favorite kind of cookie?
Chocolate chip.
All right. Awesome. So if you imagine a chocolate chip cookie in the oven, all right, it's baking and it's just almost ready and it smells so good, you're gonna open up that oven, all right, and Carrie, you're gonna take a deep breath and I want you to smell that chocolate chip cookie, and you go and you smell how good that cookie is.
That's good, right? Yes.
So you've taken it out. It's too hot, though. You can't eat it yet. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to blow on that cookie.
Oh, that's
good. To cool it down. That's cookie breathing.
Okay,
all right.
That's
so it's
good.
Taking a deep breath in and smelling that cookie and then blowing it off so that we can eat it. All right.
That's a good.
Very simple, easy way that we're going to start by managing our anxiety is cookie breathing.
That's all right. So good.
Isn't that fun?
That's so good.
It's just easy.
Yeah. And I think back to a doctor friend that I have that talked the importance of breathing. She's like, your body is really amazing. How God gives you these inner coping mechanisms to work through fear or anxiety. And the first one is breathing, just like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I also really encourage people to get out and exercise. I think that it is amazing the amount of kids that I have come in my office who are not exercising, and they're like, I don't know why I'm so anxious. Well, yeah. I mean, we just know all that stuff is building up in your body. Of course you're going to be anxious, but when we exercise, we're literally burning off the adrenaline and all of the hormones that have built up in our bodies. That's why in the middle of a soccer game, kids aren't anxious because they're running and they're burning off that all of that stuff that has built up.
So,
you know, medication, I'm not opposed to medication.
Right.
But I will say,
try other things first.
Try other things. It's a whole lifestyle approach. It's way bigger than just one nuanced fix.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, when I tell kids or girls, when I'm talking to them, we're talking about anxiety, it's like, you know, I look back, like, I have anxiety. I had anxiety as a teenager, but we just didn't have a word for it back then.
Right.
I just called it stress, which now we know that I think anxiety is stress. It's just gotten to an unhealthy level.
Yeah.
But you know, for years I was like, well, this is just how I am. It's just, I can't do anything about it. And so I'll just live with it. But what you realize is it's just going to get worse with time. And so you've got to take healthy coping mechanisms so it doesn't get worse with time. So
yes,
you can interrupt it, like what you were saying. And even talking about the breathing, and now that I'm aware, I can tell when my amygdala is kicking in, because it's always that panicked fight
yes.
or flight. Or say certain times, you know, if I'm about to speak, and a couple of times when I've been nervous, what I've learned to, instead of like, you know, I can't talk, my heart is racing.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it used to be, that's why I hated public speaking growing up,
uh-huh.
because I'm like, I can't do this, because all I could think about was how nervous I am.
Yeah.
Instead of staying there, I say, okay, this just means I want to do well. You know, this is just a sign that I care and I want to do well.
Yes.
And I can take that nervousness and turn it into excitement.
Exactly.
You know, like, actually, this is such a privilege. I can go and share a message with these girls that I know is going to help them. And, you know, I want to be a little nervous, because there have been times when I wasn't nervous. I didn't have any jitters, and I didn't do as well as times when I had a little bit of jitterness beforehand.
Exactly.
And so I think, again, it goes back to the reframing the situation that, okay, I'm scared to stand up in front of my history class and give this, you know, point or give this presentation. And instead of staying there in that nervous place, I can't do it. You know, everybody's looking at me, say, hey, you know, I came to be a blessing to people. This is going to really help them, what I'm about to tell them. And just then not thinking about yourself, but having turned it into that excitement, I think it can reframe how the whole situation looks and help you work through anxiety.
Well, because it's expecting a different outcome. You know,
that's
nervous
good.
And excited have the exact same emotions.
Okay.
You have the exact same feelings in your body with nervous and excited. But nervous is anticipating a negative outcome.
Oh.
Excited is anticipating a positive outcome.
That's so good.
Yes.
That's so good.
Exactly what you're saying, reframing that. That's why mm-hmm. I love, you know, in our house, we call it nerf-sided. All right.
That's
good. Sometimes we're nerf-sided.
Right.
And we're feeling all of those same things, but how are you going to anticipate the outcome? You know you're going to have a good time. You know this is going to go well. And because we're believers, we know that our story has already been written.
Right.
It's already been accomplished.
Right.
Christ has already gone before us. He knows the ending. And our job is to get to show up. How
right.
cool is that? That's full excitement. It takes away the nervousness.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to, too, is just trusting God with his plan. And that's something I see a lot in the work that I'm doing. And I actually have a talk that I've been given this past year is trusting God's plan for your child's life. And what I'm seeing, especially, you know, when you've been doing parenting as long as we have, you kind of see the different trends. And what I'm seeing is that I think that sometimes the kids are anxious because the parents are anxious that, like, plan A has to work.
Yes.
Like, this is our plan. And
yes.
especially as moms, I'm like, we can get stuck with one vision in our head of, like, this is how my child's life should look. This is how my family should look. And then when things don't go according to plan, when they don't make the team or they don't get into that school, we're panicking and overreacting and we act like it's a disaster. And that is going to affect our children.
Yes.
And really what we're doing is we're trying to play God and we're trying mm-hmm. to manipulate and fix a situation or control a situation that is beyond our control.
Yes.
And that's why you do have to have faith and just be like, okay, this door did not open for whatever reason, but something else is, he's going to use it. You know, like, there, it's not a waste, and I'm just going to have to sit and trust in that.
Well, and I always ask parents, before we start trying to help our kids, I've really, like exactly what you're saying, I think that we have to start with ourselves,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think we have to ask ourselves, is there some kind of transference that we are imposing on our kids, our expectations for them? Or are there things that we are insecure about, or that we were insecure about when we were their age, that we're trying to prevent them from having to experience?
Yes,
you know?
Definitely.
And I think that that's a really hard situation. I did a whole podcast on this, and it was called Leave the Cowlick Alone, because I had this horrible cowlick, all right, in the front of my hair ever since I was a kid. And my youngest son, bless him, was not super lucky to inherit my cowlick, okay? And so all my adult life, I've been, like, trying to fix his cowlick. And it's one of those simple but silly examples of that's my stuff.
Right.
You know?
Right.
He doesn't
might
care.
Be proud of his cowlick.
Exactly. He yeah. cares nothing about the cowlick.
That's hilarious.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think as parents, yes, anxiety, our anxiety can lead into their anxiety.
Yes.
If we're not careful with checking ourselves and really looking in the mirror as to, all right, what's a big deal to me? What did I not make cheerleading? And that's why I'm most concerned that they're not going to be cheerleading.
Right.
Or did I not get invited to a party? And that's why I'm so obsessed with orchestrating the events of the party.
Yes.
What's our piece in this that's contributing to the anxiety? And once we can really take a hard look at ourselves, what are our insecurities? Then I think we can turn our focus onto our kids.
Yes, I agree 100%. And it is. And like I said, I've even had to work on my anxiety. That's really my main motivation. I'm like, I don't want to pass this on to my kids. You know, I don't want them having the same struggles I did. So checking yourself. And, you know, I shared this story. It's just the best example I can think of that on a real life level. And I shared this story in More Than a Mom. But I have a friend. Her daughter's very smart. And her daughter was in 10th grade, and she called her from her high school, and she's like, Mom, you got to come pick me up. Like, I am freaking out. Everybody's talking about how hard this advanced history test is. I'm going to fail it. I can't do it. Please come get me right now. So my friend knew that she had been in the area of her school that's called the mall, and that's where all the students go between their classes, and they just hang out, but it's also where they freak each other out because they're talking about, I got a C on that test, or this test is so hard, and they start panicking. But my friend knew that, and she'd always told her daughter, beware of the mall mentality.
Wow.
And so she told her, she's like, you know, you're ready for this test. I saw you study. I'm not going to check you out. I want you to get out of the mall, go into the library, clear your head. I promise you, you'll do fine, and you're ready to take that test. And so her daughter was not convinced, but she had no choice but to take that test because her mom would not rescue her. And so what I share with girls is like, okay, she not only took that test, she made an A. This girl's a straight A student.
Wow.
Her senior year, she was a national merit finalist.
Wow.
She got a full scholarship to the university of her choice. She's an engineering major.
Wow.
She is a very smart girl.
Right.
But my story is that even she doubted herself when those outside voices got in her head. She probably left her house that morning feeling confident.
Yes.
Kind of like sometimes we leave, oh, I look good. My outfit's really cute. And then you see your friends like, oh, I hate my
Never
dress.
Mind.
I look terrible.
Yes.
Because you're all of a sudden the outside noise is getting in your head. And so, you know, it's like the fact is we all have these malls in our life, and it could be the mall of making the team,
yes.
the mall of getting this 30 on your ACT or getting into this college that we're trying to micromanage things. But what I also tell to moms is like, you know, imagine if my friend had not been in a healthy place herself. And all of a sudden she's like, well, my daughter, she can't fail this test because she won't get into Harvard if
yes.
she does. And so she goes and rescues her so she can come home and study more. And then all of a sudden, a week later, same thing happens. And the daughter calls her again. And then this happens, and the mom goes and rescues her again because the mom's panicking too. And then all of a sudden, a month later, the mom is taking the daughter to a counselor saying she is so anxious and she has this fear of test taking. When if you really look at the situation,
yes.
it was that the mom kept rescuing her and was feeling that habit
preach,
and that daughter,
sister,
you
keep
know,
preaching.
And so
yes.
that's what happens when we make our children feel like they're not
yes,
capable
yes,
because,
yes.
you know, we know that anxiety is an overestimation of the problem and it's an underestimation of your ability to do that,
exactly.
do that problem,
oh.
which is, I think, Sissy Goff, I've heard that from her.
I love
it's
it.
Overestimating the problem and underestimating your ability to deal with that problem. But as moms, if we're not careful and if we don't check our fears and our anxieties, and this is the only path, and if she doesn't get into this school, then it's a disaster. We're not trusting God. And so that's really what
it's underestimating God.
Yes.
And it's underestimating our child.
Yes,
yes.
Yes. And so I think that as we're helping our kids through it, we've also got to work through it too. And let me give a lot of grace to any moms listening because, you know, a friend and I were talking about this yesterday. Like, we have worries our husbands don't even think to worry about. Like,
yeah. oh
we've got
gosh.
Intuition
yes.
as moms. Like, sometimes I am worried about things he doesn't even realize to worry about.
Right.
Or I'm seeing all the details play out because I'm driving the carpools and going to the doctor's appointments and hearing everything that I kind of take a lot of that for the team.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
And so we carry a lot more worries than our husbands do typically
yeah.
because we're in the game more. You know, we're just more, you got a daily pulse. And so there's a lot more things we can worry about, plus just that mama bear instinct.
Yes.
But I do think that we've got to work on ourselves, and I'm saying this from experience.
Me too, girl.
You know, to help our children feel strong and capable and confident, like, okay, this is hard, but I can do it.
I believe in you.
Yes.
You
yes.
can do this. There are a couple of, oh, we could talk about this forever. I have so many ideas. Let me point back, though. I love the story that you just told, and I really want to highlight something that stood out to me that I love that mom did. The mom mm-hmm. said, get out of the mall and go to the library.
Yes.
That is one of the best pieces of advice that we can give for anybody dealing with anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
The absolute worst thing a person can do who is anxious is to stay in the same location that they're in at that moment. The best thing they can do is to get up and go. I don't care if it's a different bedroom. I don't care if it's to walk around Target. I don't care what it is, to go for a walk.
Oh, that's good.
Get up and get out of the situation, because when you stay in that, the mentality is going to stay. You're not being able to shift your focus at all.
That's good.
So I love that your mom, the mom said that, like, that was just spot on.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think that's so fantastic.
Yeah. And we were talking earlier, I was talking to a girl recently, and she said, you know, what do you do when you feel anxious? Maybe your friends are being mean to you, or they're leaving you out, and you want to turn to your faith, and you don't know what to do besides praying. Like, are there certain scriptures that you can turn to?
Yeah.
So let's talk about that too for a minute too. It's like, you know, say a girl or a boy who's listening to this, they're struggling with those anxious thoughts. They've removed themselves from that situation. What are some truths from God that they can just have planted in their heart to call to mind in those moments?
Oh, I love that. I love, love, love that. Well, first, let me do the flip side of that, okay? While absolutely scripture is truth and the Lord has given us confident truths that we can cling to, I think that one of the barriers that we have to be aware of is what I call anxious praying. And I think that that's a trap that we can get into as Christians, is using prayer as a means to just work out our anxiety.
Okay, that's good.
It's kind of cloaked as prayer.
Right.
But really, this is just a way for us to worry more.
Okay.
And so I want to, I challenge my own clients and my kids. Okay, pray about it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But pray once and then let it go. All
yes.
right. The Lord heard your prayers. He didn't miss it. All right. And you continuing to pray over the same thing over and over and over and over is only making your anxiety worse and worse and worse, because anxiety feeds on anxiety.
That's so good.
The more you water it, the more you take care of it, the more, just like a plant, the more you give it sunlight and fertilizer and all the things that it needs, the bigger and bigger it's going to grow. So whether it's you talking about your anxieties with your friends over and over and over again, or praying about them over and over and over again, neither of those are helpful.
They're not leading to change.
They're not leading to change.
That's good.
Exactly.
That's so good.
All right. So there's that side of it. Now, absolutely, cast all of our cares on the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
He is so good, and He wants to be there for us. You know, I think one of my favorite verses is from Proverbs 12:25, which says, anxiety weighs down the heart, but a kind word cheers it up.
Oh,
isn't that
so good?
A so kind
good.
Word cheers it up. And so when we're in those anxious places, laughter is good for the soul.
Mm-hmm.
It is a kind word. And if we can find ways to incorporate laughter, even, I know this is going to sound crazy, but the science has proven that our brains don't know the difference between a real smile and a fake smile. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yes. All smiles, whether it's real or fake, actually reduce anxiety and tension. All right.
Mm.
So a lot of athletes know this. This is an athletic trick.
Okay.
That when you're walking up to bat or about to go, you know, play your sport, if you can smile to yourself, mm-hmm. it automatically calms your nervous system down.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
How cool is that?
Okay, so we all need to smile more.
Smile more.
Interesting.
Whether it's conjured and, you know, you're forcing yourself, your brain doesn't tell the difference.
Okay.
But how cool that we worship a God
yes.
who says a kind word cheers it up.
That's right? So good.
It's so cool.
And the other thing I was thinking of when you said that, like, say I'm feeling anxious, I think you're just in your head so much. You could even go say a kind word to somebody else.
Yes.
Say, you know what? I'll get a good distraction here. And just like, she looks really pretty in that red sweater. I'm going to tell her that sweater looks great on her.
I totally agree.
Just to get your mind in a different place.
We call them gratitude letters. And so whether it's a gratitude for a person or even just a situation, having a gratitude letter that you can write to somebody else or shoot a text to somebody else, but that mentality is huge for helping to handle your anxiety.
Yeah, that is so good. You know, something else I've done too, that sometimes if I'm worried about something and I've prayed about it, I'm like, God, I just thank him in advance. I'm going to thank you in advance for how you're going to handle this situation.
Yeah.
For me, it just gets my heart in the right posture of knowing that I have no idea what he's going to do, but I know his plan is good. I know he loves my children more than I do. I know he loves me, you know, and really trusting in that, and that we just see such a small piece of the puzzle. And so you never know what God's going to do with something that looks like a disaster today or looks hopeless today. It's just part of a bigger plan.
It is. My dad was a pastor. And so growing up, I remember a few of his analogies. But one of the ones that I have always clung to is when he was talking about understanding God's plan and worrying about it, he used this analogy of an area rug. And if you look like if we are here on earth and the area rug is between us and the Lord in heaven,
mm-hmm.
and we're looking up, we get to see the underside of an area rug,
all
right? I don't know if you've ever looked at the underside of the area rug, but it's real ugly, all
right? Right, messy.
It is messy. Yes. There are threads everywhere. It does not make sense. It looks like chaos.
Mm-hmm.
But when the Lord looks down on the top of the area rug, it's weaving this beautiful pattern that makes so much sense. And maybe we don't understand until we get to heaven and get to see the full picture of the area rug. We right now are just seeing that underside of it. That doesn't seem to make sense, but we worship a God of clarity and not a God of chaos.
Yes. And I think about that verse all the time when everything's so confusing.
Yes.
I'm like, this is not from God.
No.
He is not a God of confusion. He is a God of order and clarity.
Yes. And we can rest and trust in that and helping to impart that message onto our kids. God is good.
Mm-hmm.
And he's only capable of doing good.
Yeah.
And so even if your child doesn't make the cheerleading team, God is still good. And for whatever reason, that was good for your child. It was not good for them to experience whatever was not his plan.
Right. Yeah, I think this is so good. And, you know, the other thing I want to ask you about, too, that I heard you in another podcast, and I was fascinated when you said this, that you said that I think anxiety can peak in college.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a lot of moms whose daughters are in college or they're sending it to their college daughters. So let's talk a little bit about that. Like, why is, especially now, I think we're seeing a lot of anxiety in college. And can we talk a little bit about why that is and what do you think is causing that?
Well, I just think that the stakes are so much higher in college.
That's good.
You know, I mean, I think that the anxieties of our youth are a huge deal in that moment. But I think the anxieties of college, they tend to have moved into greater, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? Who am I going to marry? So I feel like the stakes have gotten a lot higher.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, and you know, I geek out over brains and brain development and all of that. But I also think that in a very real sense, our brains, our prefrontal cortex has now started to really develop.
Mm-hmm.
These are those executive functions. And those are the areas that start to understand consequences.
Mm.
When we're in high school, we are way more carefree and chill and, oh, it's fine. Nothing bad's going to happen. I can drive a million miles an hour and I won't get in a car accident. And, you know, those kind of really more dangerous aspects that, you know, because that part of our brain hasn't fully developed yet, we're able to kind of go with flow.
Mm.
By the time you get to college, it's actually a lot bigger of a deal to experience those things. And we're starting to see that more clearly and recognize it
That's so good.
Because our brains have developed, yeah.
Yeah, and you're also, so that's happening to a college student, and they're away from their support system because you go to college, you're leaving your church, your yep. family, your high school friends, like that support system. So, I mean, I'm a big believer, like, don't struggle alone. Like, don't think you can handle it on your own. That find help, you know, find a trusted resource. Go see a counselor. Get help, you know, like don't let your little anxiety turn into big anxiety.
Exactly, because like anxiety early, feeds on anxiety.
Anxiety is going to feed on, it's just going to get worse.
Yeah.
And it's nothing to be ashamed of. Like,
yes.
it just means you want to do well and that you're conscientious. Like, I was telling Camille and her friends this morning, I was like, you know, if you never had any stress, then you wouldn't have a very good life.
Yes.
Because you'd be sitting on your butt eating, you know, watching Netflix all day.
Exactly.
And so, you know, that just means that anxiety means you're trying to do something and you want to do it well. And, you know, you're putting pressure on yourself, but you just got to rethink it.
Completely agree. Well, and I think, too, it's helpful to know that we've been able to identify certain categories of anxiety,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so we know that new situations, those unfamiliar, unpredictable situations, those are going to cause anxiety.
That's
and so
good.
The transition that's between
good.
Home into college, that's a
all,
new situation.
It's all
exactly.
new situations every day.
All new situations,
yeah,
all new
right.
friends, all new living. How
yes.
do I do my laundry? I mean, all of these basic new stuff.
Yes.
We know that that is going to cause anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
We know that unclear expectations, that is also a huge source of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we have a professor and they are not very clear on their grading style or what they expect out of you, or if you have a boyfriend who one day they're hot and the next day they're cold. Those are unclear expectations.
Right.
And that in itself is going to cause anxiety. So I think helping to be able to categorize some different things, you know, different personality types are going to have more anxiety than others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ones who are high performers, those perfectionist tendencies have a very high fear of failure.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to cause more anxiety, you know. I laugh, though, the difference between a perfectionist and a procrastinator,
mm-hmm.
because really a perfectionist and a procrastinator are the exact same person.
Okay.
Exact same person. The procrastinator is just an overwhelmed perfectionist.
Oh,
so
interesting. Okay.
Perfectionists are very outright with their perfectionism.
Right.
Procrastinators are just overwhelmed perfectionists.
Huh.
That's all they are.
And that's what's
okay.
making them procrastinate.
Exactly.
Okay.
The fear of starting. Because of the fear of failure, so they don't want to start. And so I think that being able to recognize some different personality types and just kind of know what our tendencies are can be super helpful for us and our kids too.
Yeah. So, you know, I think this is just, it goes back to just that self-awareness and know, like, if you are feeling anxious, like, okay, instead of just like numbing it out or, you know, doing something to distract myself, like sitting with it and saying, what, why am I feeling anxious or what am I telling myself? And again, I think this is where the faith component comes up and how you're viewing the world that, you know, okay, if this doesn't work out, you know, I was anxious growing up, but the best thing he always told me was just do your best, Carrie, and leave the results to God.
Yeah.
And that took so much pressure off my shoulders because, you know, I was like, what if this doesn't happen? What if I don't get this? He's like, did you do your best? I'm like, yeah, 110%, like
yeah.
always, you know.
Yeah.
He's like, well, you don't have to worry about it. He took that pressure off, and he meant it. Like, he was not worried about the outcome. He just expected us to do our best and to do what we could at that time and then just trusting God with the results. And I think that's what's missing in our society. And I can say, you know, even it is different. These kids go to college.
Yeah.
I was shocked because I thought, I remember telling my oldest, oh, you won't have to decide on your major till you're junior. Like, that was how it was when we were in
right.
school.
Right.
No. You have to declare your major as a freshman.
Yes.
Now, you can change. You know, she's changed several times. She's now the one where she's happy. But, you know, I think there's this pressure, like, you know, or even, you know, I've won in eighth grade and she's got to decide now, does she want the advanced high school diploma?
I mean,
because that's one track or the regular diploma is one track.
Yeah.
You know, like, these kids are forced into a world where you have to think about your future in a way you're like, I don't know what I want to do.
No.
I don't know what my major to be. And again, you know, that it could seem so set in stone, but that's when we take God out of the picture. Like,
yeah.
okay, maybe I'm on the wrong track. Maybe I'm in the wrong major for a year. But again, going back to the rug story, like what I have learned, one good thing about when you've lived 50 years, he uses that, you
yes.
know, like there were so many little jobs I had or things that wasn't the thing I was going to do. But You know, I used to do photography. I'm like, that has come into really handy with the business that I do. And
yes.
Doing blog posts. I have photographs. You know, like all these little things we do along the way that might lead to our real calling, the bigger thing later on. It's not a waste.
Yes.
Even if it, or it might be, you know, you were in the wrong major for a year and then you met the boy who would eventually become your husband.
Right.
Like a lot of times it's a relationship you're supposed to have or a conversation that you're going to have, even if it's not the track you're going to be on forever.
Yes.
And I think as we can open up our mind to be like, okay, it's not a waste and I don't have to sit here and regret. And like you were saying, it sounds to me that sometimes these kids get to college and they're, you know, because their brain is processing things differently, maybe, oh, I made these mistakes, now my future is ruined, or it's really easy to live in that regret and not be able to move forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what we want to help people work through.
Yes. And I think, too, setting some boundaries around the amount of time that we're allowed to worry about certain things. You know, I think
that's
it's unrealistic
good.
For us to say, oh, I'm just never going to worry. That's
right.
just not, that's not real life, you
right.
know. But I do think if we're not careful to set some boundaries around it, then worries can have their way of infiltrating every single aspect of our lives.
Good.
And
yes.
so I think that it's really, really important. And I try to help clients. We'll literally set up what we call a worry time, you know, and that may be from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. And that is the time of day that you are going to worry about absolutely everything. You're going to worry about your boyfriend and your husband and your major and your parents and your friend. You're going to worry about absolutely everything, but you're going to do it for a finite period of time. And when you're tempted outside of that 1 hour or 30 minutes or whatever you need to do, when you're tempted to do that, that's where we replace it with verses and truth and say, no, you know what? I'm going to worry about this at 4 o'clock tomorrow. Tomorrow will come, right?
Yes.
But for right now, I'm going to take my thoughts captive and trust, cast all my cares on him.
That's so good.
You know, and so really forcing yourself, it's an active, it's not just a passive, oh, maybe my worries will go away someday. But
right.
it's really taking some action steps in order to help preserve and protect that time that you worry. Worry well, but worry once.
That's so good.
That's the goal.
Okay. Worry well, but worry once.
Exactly.
That needs to be like a framed print.
Well, and I really encourage parents too. I mean, I hear of so many, I love it for moms and kids to have great relationships, especially we're talking about college students.
Right.
But Carrie, it's not normal for a college student to be calling their mom 4 times a day.
Right.
That's not normal.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so I think what we as parents tend to sometimes do on accident is exactly what that mom was doing in high school, rescuing our kids and letting them feed their anxiety by letting them talk about it more.
Right.
I know as parents, we want to hear our kids. We want to be there for our kids. But if they're calling us on a consistent basis to have the same worry and the same conversation, that's stagnating.
Yes.
You're not getting anywhere with that. And as a parent,
yes.
that's not helpful or healthy for us to keep doing with our kids. We as parents have to say, you know, honey, I know it's not 4 o'clock. When it's 4 o'clock and you want to worry, you're more than welcome to call me back then. But I'm not going to talk about this right now.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to call me back or do you want to change the subject?
Right.
You know?
And especially, that's such a good point, because I think we live in an age where that is very common. And for moms, it's almost like a badge of honor. Like, oh,
yeah.
she calls me all the time.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I don't know if that's healthy several times a day, every single day,
no.
asking every little question. Because what I have found is, like, for us or our kids, like, you know, that also can prevent them from developing the relationships that they need.
Yes.
You know, as moms, there's like, we want to feel needed. And
of
that's
course.
What it feeds, that need to feel needed. But, you know, obviously we want them to call us with the big stuff. But, you know, if they're calling us, well, how do I do this laundry? How do I do this? Every little thing. You know, they could be asking that to a friend or somebody else that they could develop a whole new relationship with, because that they're in that new situation and they're really relying on these other people. Like, that's the whole purpose of going away from home, is to develop these new relationships beyond your family and to grow in those relationships and depend on people in addition to your parents,
yeah.
and not always have, you know, your mom or your dad as your automatic go-to for every single thing. Because then what happens, you know, we're not going to be forever.
No.
And I always tell moms this too when I'm talking, like, that's why I put a lot of energy into helping my girls learn how to be a good friend, nurturing their friendships, teaching them about that, because also I want their relationship with each other. But I'm like, I'm not going to be here.
Yes.
I want them to have other relationships besides me and to know how to build those relationships, because they're going to need them. You know, something's going to have to fill in that void, obviously God, but they'll need some other earthly relationships, and you want them to not need you for every little thing.
I completely agree. And I mean, I would even take that a step farther and say, yes, we want them to develop these other relationships with other people and ask them. But I also think it's important that our kids do things on their own.
Yes.
And fail.
Yes, yes.
What? You know what I mean?
I didn't know I couldn't wash that red t-shirt exactly. with a white t-shirt. Yes,
that
I know
the
now
best
because it's pink.
Possible. Exactly. Yeah. And so giving our kids the freedom to fail and
yes.
see, okay, yes, maybe I messed that up, but I'm okay. You
right.
know?
Yes.
I think that when we can let go of that fear of failure and say, okay, I'm still standing. Life still goes on. The world didn't come to an end. I'm going to be okay. It gives
yes.
you the courage and prompts you to do more things and to put yourself out there again because, all right, I failed once and it was okay. And
right.
now I can
survived.
Do it again. You
exactly.
know?
And I'm actually working on a new talk about raising confident kids and becoming a confident girl. But I mean, that's what I've realized when I sit there and think about it. Like the only way you build confidence is by doing hard things and surprising yourself. And like, wow, I didn't know I could be that brave or I didn't know I could do that. Like you have to put yourself out there. And putting yourself out there is always going to take some failure. There's always going to be something that doesn't work out. And I love what Adam Grant says. He says he does something, one thing every year that he knows he'll fail at.
Oh, wow.
Just to kind of stretch himself. Because
yeah.
If you never fail, you're not pushing yourself enough.
Exactly.
You're not stretching enough.
Exactly.
And I'm a perfectionist by nature. And I always say, like, writing cured me of that because I wrote for 7 years. I had so much failure and rejection. And I look back and I'm like, God was so gracious. Like, he knew I needed that to be able to do this as a living.
Yes.
Like, I had to go through that. Not only did I need to improve, and it forced me to improve, but it just, I needed not be so phased by failure. And now it just is not that big of a deal to
yes.
me. I mean, not that I want to fail in something no. big. I would be heartbroken if I failed, but it's just, this one thing doesn't work. It's okay.
Yes.
You know, like when you've survived it, you're like, oh, okay.
Uh-oh.
It worked out, you know.
But isn't it interesting that we can say that about ourselves, but then when it comes to our kids, I feel like,
yes.
well, they can't fail.
Right.
You know, I've got to
right.
protect them from failing.
Right.
When it's like, yes, they can.
Right.
They are no different than me. We are the same thing. Their failure is going to prove good in their lives as well, just like mine is in my life.
Yes. And it's how we see it and how somebody said this once, and it's so true, but like your proudest parenting moments can come from seeing how your kids respond to a failure or a disappointment. Because when they bounce back,
yes.
and they will if you're supporting them the right way,
yeah.
and when they're resilient, and when they say, I'm going to double down,
yeah.
and I'm not going to give up on this dream, and you're
watch
like, wow,
this.
I thought they would have given up. Like, it's so cool as a parent and so to learn from them, like I'm so inspired by that,
yes.
that something I thought would, you know, bring them down forever has actually made them stronger and more determined.
Or when they actually encourage us
yes.
too, you know,
yes.
I was taking a test. I'm not very good at test taking. And I did this whole certification. It's a long story. And I was really frustrated and I kept taking these tests and I kept failing every single one over. And this is like last year. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, this is adult life. I know better. I know about failure. I know about, you know, studying and stuff like that. And I was so frustrated with this test. And I was upset. I was crying one day over after failing this test once again. And my then 12-year-old walks in and he's like, what's going on? And I was like, oh, I can't pass. I'm never going to do it. I'm on this like total shame spiral, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me and he was like, well, what did you get right?
Huh.
And I was like, wow. Oh. Well, I never thought about that. He was like, okay, so you got something wrong. Well, tell me what you got right.
Huh.
And I'm like, oh my gosh,
that's
so encouraging
awesome.
When
yes.
our kids can start having that resilience and actually speak into our lives
yes.
because of that too. You
well,
know?
And I just want to say the reason, obviously, that's like God speaking. I love when God speaks through our kids like that.
Yeah.
So that's how I see those moments. But you know, a lot of that goes back to, it's like the fruit of your parenting because you have allowed your kids to fail because you've made no big deal about perfection. You know, like don't be a perfectionist. You've given
yeah.
them that space. You know, you've kind of cultivated that mindset that God, that's what I love when our kids grow up and you realize how God is so good. Like I taught
so
them that,
good.
You know, like
yes.
what you taught them and you forgot in your own moment when it comes back to you. You're just like, thank you, God.
Yes.
Like, I'm so glad.
I needed that.
I didn't put that pressure on him before
yes.
that, because I didn't know that I would need him to repeat my own words
yes.
back to me.
Yes. I needed that.
Yes.
Yes. Oh,
that's so good. Okay, well, I know we could talk forever. I want to, before we finish, I want to talk about this new thing that you're doing in counseling.
Yeah.
I think it's called Brain Corps.
Yes.
So this is so exciting. So tell me a little bit about what you've done traditionally as a counselor and then what you're doing now with Brain Corps.
Okay, so Brain Corps is a neurofeedback practice. And so neurofeedback is a way to train the brain. So medication is wonderful, and I'm not anti-medication, but medication's not for everybody. And so if there are people out there who are struggling with anxiety, depression, even things carry like insomnia or migraines, tons of different things, all of those are related to the brain. And so what we understand now is that we can actually train our brain the same way that you would train your body. I tell people all the time, you go to the gym to train your body. You do neurofeedback to train your brain. It's the exact same thing. But it's a way to train your brain so that it operates in a different frequency to help reduce certain symptoms. So for us, for today, you know, we're talking about anxiety. Well, anxiety is a very fast speed brainwave that produces, it's called beta brainwaves.
And so you hook somebody up to a machine, which we said, I'm going to do that. I'm going to come in
it's
and be
so
hooked up
cool.
to your brain core.
Yes.
Okay, so you hook the person
yes.
up.
Yes. So you start by doing a brain map with them. It's called an EEG or a QEEG.
Okay.
And we're able to find the areas of the brain that are dysregulated. And so from there, then we build a training protocol, basically a workout for that individual person.
Huh.
And then we're able to really help them re-regulate those different brain waves. And so they're building new neural pathways in their brain. I think one of the best examples that I can give, I tell people, it's like when you're 5 years old and you're first learning how to ride a bike, the bike is super cool and it's fun, but you don't know what to do with it. And so you get on it and you wobble and you kind of walk and sometimes you fall over, but you keep practicing and you keep training over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day it just clicks and
so
suddenly
good.
You know how to ride a bike. And that's because a new neural pathway in your brain formed that said, this is how you ride a bike.
And you never lose that.
And you never lose that. That's what neurofeedback is. So it's I love the Academy of Pediatrics has actually said that neurofeedback is on the same level of efficacy for treating and training focus and attention issues as stimulant medication.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Wow.
So it's really powerful too. So that's kind of in a nutshell, what I'm doing. I love my counseling piece. I say counseling changes your soft wiring. Neurofeedback changes your hard wiring.
That's
both
awesome.
Are super effective and necessary. And when they can work together, it's just such a power punch.
So tell me real quick, you're kind of explaining to me earlier, like what happens if somebody is doing a session with the Brain Corps? You said they might be watching a show.
Yes. So there are different ways that you can train the brain.
Okay.
Yes. So the most common way that we'll train the brain is letting somebody watch Netflix, Disney Plus, whatever they want to watch on TV. And then we paste one or two little sensors to the brain, to the area that we're training.
Okay.
And as they're watching TV, when the brain starts using waves that we don't want it to.
Like
if you're struggling with focus and attention, you would probably have too much delta and theta brainwaves. It's a very high delta theta.
Okay.
So if you're producing high delta theta, and we don't want that, we want to train your brain to bring those levels down, then the TV screen gets darker and the sound fades in and out on there.
Interesting.
And so your brain is getting rewarded if it uses the brainwaves that we're teaching it to do.
So it's kind of going down, but then
yeah.
if you put into practice what you just taught them to do in those moments, then the picture comes
back. It's bright and pretty, and you get to watch TV like you want to. Our brains naturally want to do things in high definition.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why all the really cool fancy TVs are out, or the new screens on the Apple phones are out.
Mm-hmm.
Our brains want to crave, they crave that. And so what we're doing is just capitalizing on how God made us and training our brain. So again, hear me, I'm not anti-medication.
Right.
But
there's a place for that.
There's a place for that, yes. But for some people, medication doesn't work. And we could talk about that a whole different day. But for some people, medication doesn't work. Some people don't want to start a child on medication, and that's okay too. In fact, I actually started BrainCore to help my own anxious child with his anxiety. I knew I didn't want to have to, you know, put him on anxiety medicine.
Wow.
And I wanted to be able to help him. And so I started neurofeedback actually to help my own child. And his sleeping has improved and he doesn't bite his fingernails off anymore. And
that's so cool.
It's so cool.
So you brought it. Did you bring it to Birmingham? Were you one of the first ones in Birmingham
yes.
to do it?
Yes. Okay. Uh-huh. In Birmingham. Yes.
And now
neurofeedback has been around since the 1950s.
Okay.
So it's old school. It's got tons of research to back it up.
Okay.
But it's just been in the last decade that our technology has caught up so that we can offer it on the outpatient level. Before, it was just at the big UCLA's and Johns Hopkins and all of the big universities and medical centers.
Cool.
So now we can do it on an outpatient level.
So that's neat. So we're saying you got the counseling as one option. You got medication as one option.
Absolutely.
And then this third really booming segment of the industry is BrainCore.
Yeah,
neurofeedback.
Yeah.
And you've got offices in Birmingham. You said where else?
There are two offices in Birmingham.
Okay.
And I have another one in Huntsville, Alabama,
awesome.
Too. But there you can find BrainCore offices all over the nation.
Okay. Oh, Alice, this is so good.
It's exciting. It's exciting to be part of the mental health community at this time in life.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going anywhere.
No.
I mean, I think it's more needed than ever. So.
Yes, agree.
Well, I love you, friend.
Me
and
too.
I love our conversations always. We could talk forever. And I hope you will come back on and follow up this conversation because I know that moms and girls will be wanting more.
I would love that. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much for coming, Alice. Friends, thank you for tuning in today. I am so grateful to have you here. And if you enjoyed this show, please subscribe wherever you listen and leave a ratings or review so that other people can find these messages too. For links to my books, my social media, and my new community on Substack, check out the show links. Thanks again for your support and have a great day.